When they shot and killed officers Alan Beck and Igor Soldo on Sunday, Jared and Amanda Miller draped a swastika flag over Officer Beck's body. That calls to mind American Nazis. They are a small but dedicated group that preaches white supremacy. The Millers were not attached to any such group, but seem to have dabbled in white supremacy and other anti-government ideologies. Joining us now to help us understand that is Robert Futrell, who teaches sociology at UNLV. He has studied the white power movement. Robert Futrell, welcome back to KNPR.
Thank you.
The investigators have got evidence of an interest in white supremacist groups on the part of the Millers, but so far no links to any group. How does a disaffected couple like this get involved in white power if they're not members of the group?
Well, this is characteristic of many anti-government and white power individuals. While there are groups out there that have names and primarily websites and meet face-to-face, really, these are decentralized networks, and there's an enormous amount of information available, especially on the internet, that many of these individuals use to attempt to make sense of their lives, lives that have gone maybe in a way that they hadn't hoped for. Jared Miller had been arrested and convicted really felt, it seems, really felt like he had been wronged by society. And these groups offer a way to interpret lives and give meaning to those. And I think he found a set of ideas and ideology that did that for him.
And I guess to be clear, this is not casual racism we're talking about. These are people who believe, much as Jared Miller seemed to have, that minorities are in control. Whites have to take back the power in this country?
Well, that's what white supremacists believe. That's mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. I mean, racism exists in subtle everyday ways throughout society. But these folks take it to a great extreme, similar to these extreme right anti-government groups. We may all have some criticisms of government, but very few of us take it to the extremes as these groups. And I think they were caught in a nexus of ideas that span both the white supremacists and anti-government actions.
With respect to these groups and the websites you'd alluded to a moment ago, who's typically supporting this ideology?
Well, in terms of who's part of the networks, I mean, it really ranges. We found in our study of white supremacy groups that it's not the typical or stereotypical idea of the uneducated, underclass, sort of belligerent, in-your-face wacko. I mean, this spans all educational levels from PhDs to less than high school. It spans all class levels, so there's a wide range of people involved in the networks.
Most Americans, I suspect, would think that it's just really, really an oddball kind of thing to adopt Hitler as a hero and look on Nazism favorably. How do these people come to see Nazis as heroes instead of as the perpetrators of mass evil?
Well, I'm not so sure in Jared Miller's case that he saw Hitler as a hero. From what I understand, he used the swastikas to mark the police officers as agents of a fascist state. And in that way, linking them to a sense of that there's a conspiracy. There's a cabal, a shadowy cabal of puppeteers that are moving things behind the scenes and really directing what is being called and has been called for quite a while a new world order.
Well, and as you noted, the meaning of draping the swastika flag over one of the bodies is kind of unclear at this point. Does that reflect the shooter's thinking? Because usually it's not this kind of inconsistent where you want to overthrow things and yet there's this reference to Nazism on the part of the other.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know, of course, what he was thinking because he's not around to tell us. But, you know, white power extremism, anti-government extremism, it's sort of in the same place on the same continuum. And whereas anti-government extremism imagines the world being controlled by a shadowy cabal, white power extremism imagines that shadowy cabal being made up of primarily Jewish interests. So they racialize it and ethnicize it in a way. But the ideas are very, very similar.
Yeah, we had a caller on a program yesterday who said that this was the result of the bank collapse. Can we be that specific? I mean, have recent economic failures disillusioned people to the point where it's pushed them toward things like white supremacy?
I don't think that specific. There are a number of reasons why these networks have developed. To put this in historical context, particularly in terms of the militia movement, if you remember, was growing prior to the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995. Timothy McVeigh engaged in the bombing, and the militia movement began to decline rapidly in terms of the numbers of people affiliated or claimed to be affiliated. In the mid-2000s, that began to rise again, and it's continued to do so to this point. So, you know, there is a cultural milieu out there that supports and foments these anti-government ideas. White supremacy is part of that, but not all of that. And it's very easy, if you are so inclined, to get in something of a bubble of those ideas, especially with the internet. And it seemed as that Jared Miller was very savvy with the internet, YouTube videos and the like. And I would be very surprised if he was not sort of developing his ideas and supporting and affirming those ideas using that milieu that exists.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Robert Futrelli. He teaches sociology at UNLV, and he has studied the white power movement in this country and elsewhere. You co-authored the book American Swastika, Inside the White Power Movement's Hidden Spaces of Hate. You spent time with a lot of folks who are members of these groups. What did you learn about the factors that propagate this ideology, the reasons that people sign on to movements like this?
Well, like all of us, the members are looking for some meaning in their lives. Now, most of us don't find that meaning in sort of anti-government, extreme anti-government or racist ideas and rhetoric, but some do, and especially when their lives aren't going as well as they might have hoped. It's interesting when you think about their ideology, if one accepts the conspiratorial assumption, then their ideas begin to make sense, that is, logical sense, on the basis of that fundamental assumption. So once that assumption has been made, that there is a conspiracy, everything gets filtered through that idea of conspiracy. And so it's very easy then to imagine and be supported by others who imagine the same thing, that your life is being directed by others and there needs to be some sort of revolutionary overthrow, which is something that Jared Miller apparently had said and suggested, that this is the start of a revolution.
Yeah, the old writer G.K. Chesterton has said, to the paranoid mind, everything makes perfect sense.
That's exactly right.
That's where this is.
That's exactly right.
Do these people inevitably come from having had a big disappointment in life? The Millers seem to fit into that category. I mean, even if they do, most of us don't resort to something extreme like this. So how does that happen?
Yeah, and the people that we interviewed, there seems to be some thing that they would define as trauma in their lives. That may be some altercation in early childhood. That may and we can't not talk about the possibility of mental illness as well. My co-author, Pete Seamy, is presently engaged in a study of formers, people who have pulled out of these movements, trying to understand how they got in and how they exit. And he's finding a lot of folks, you know, do exhibit mental illness, but that doesn't explain everything.
Have you seen any of the videos, YouTube and elsewhere, of the Millers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you watched them, what stood out for you? What did you notice?
Well, I think it's hard, again, to say what was going on in his mind, but based on those videos, I mean, the internet enables all of us to gain a little bit of fame if we want it, right? And his videos suggest that he had a particular set of ideas that he had developed and had supported, and, you know, YouTube videos and enable one to articulate those, and I think it makes someone feel a bit powerful. You know, this is the mass amateurization of media. Everyone has a pulpit, and he took it and to express, probably for himself and perhaps others, his ideas that had meaning for him.
Now, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, there are 8 hate groups in Nevada that are being watched. 5 of them are in Las Vegas, including 2 white nationalist groups and a neo-Nazi group. Who are the white nationalists?
Well, they have very similar ideas to some of the more extreme parts of the right-wing anti-government movement. But white nationalists in particular want to have a white nation. Some of them argue for separatism. Some of them argue for racial genocide. On both sides, they think that racial genocide is happening to whites, and therefore they should engage in some racial genocide. Many of them think in terms of millennial or end time ideas, and imagine, especially on the white power side, that a race war is coming, and it is destined. And whether or not Jared Miller thought this, it's unclear, but it does seem clear that he thought his actions could be a catalyst to some kind of war revolutionary act.
Yeah, the revolution that he was apparently shouting about prior to doing all of this, we're not really clear about what exactly he had in mind.
That's right, although it appears that he thought his action would be a catalyst to whatever he thought.
A few years ago, we had a representative from the Anti-Defamation League on this show, and the impression I got from talking with her and with others about hate crimes is that per capita, there aren't that many hate crimes in the Las Vegas area. And I'm wondering, first of all, if that's your perception as well, and then if that is reasonably accurate as far as you know, if the murders by the Millers amount to an aberration.
I think that's probably accurate based on reported hate crimes. But from our research, what is more prevalent is sort of everyday street violence that goes underreported or simply unreported, especially in Southern California where white supremacy and anti-government groups are more prevalent. And, of course, we have a connection to Southern California in many ways. It's our impression that that this happens much, much more frequently than we'll ever know because it just doesn't get reported as a hate crime or as a crime at all.
Do you think of the Millers Act as a hate crime?
I think from what I understand at this point, I think it's hatred for an oppressive government. And the police, unfortunately, are seen by many of these folks as the frontline agents of this oppressive government. They are out in the community. They are accessible. And I think the reporting sounds correct that these folks acted on their own, but they acted from a cultural milieu that is very prevalent and easily accessible and supports, in the end, these kinds of ideas.
Hmm. We tend to think of groups like this, and we often think of the South or the Great Plains in the parts of the Midwest. How prevalent are these groups in the American Southwest?
Well, if you look at the hate map that the SPLC offers, the most prevalent area is Southern California. I think 77 groups the last time I checked. Now, these groups range from established organizations to websites, so it's hard to know numbers. But that is the sort of center point for activism out here. Phoenix is the same, is very similar.
Mm-hmm. Does the kind of live and let live ethos that I think we have in Nevada encourage these anti-government people to come to Nevada or Las Vegas?
I think so. I think that, you know, these have libertarian roots, but again, it's hard to paint with a broad brush. The idea of freedom is definitely part of the rhetoric of Miller and anti-government folks that he apparently thought he was aligned with. But I have to say that I would say most people connected to the militia and probably most people connected to the white power movement wouldn't see the acts that he took as quite acceptable, even though the ideas that underlie those acts are very prevalent in that culture.
Right now, a lot of people are asking what authorities need to do to make sure this kind of thing is stopped in the future before it happens. What would you say to police if they asked you how to distinguish the dangerous extremists from the ones who are just spouting rhetoric?
Well, it's very, very difficult. If we care at all about civil liberties, then talk is free, and it's not to be criminalized. But talk sometimes leads to actions, and while we shouldn't, we can be surprised and of course appalled when something like this happens. We shouldn't be surprised that it happens. We don't know who will engage in these acts, but we can say with that this cultural milieu persists that supports these kinds of actions. And as long as it does persist, we can make a sure bet that they will continue to happen.
Robert Futrell is a sociology teacher at UNLV. He has studied the white power movement. In fact, he's co-authored a book called American Swastika, Inside the White Power Movement's Hidden Spaces of Hate. Robert Futrell, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.